Britt Nicol there with Gold, and I'm talking, as I said, to Tricia Moat from Tricia, sarcoma, okay, and a lot of people won't have heard of that, will they?
No, you're right, and a lot of patients, when they're diagnosed with sarcoma, have never heard of the word before. Sarcoma is cancer. It's a cancer which can occur anywhere in the body, and they call it a connective tissue cancer, so that means it can be any tissue that supports the body. So it can be in the bone, it can be in the fat, it can be coming from muscle, nerve fibres, blood vessels. So it can affect any age. It's rare. It's only 1% of all cancers that are diagnosed are sarcomas, and so that works out to about 3,800 patients a year.
Right, now, I mean, it's interesting that, because you think of cancer, just it can get anywhere. So why give a special name to this, if you see what I mean?
It's to do with the type of tissue it originates from. That's why they call it sarcoma. But it's terrifically complicated, because within sarcoma, there are 100 different subtypes of sarcoma. So it's very rare that you actually meet another sarcoma patient with exactly the same type of sarcoma as you.
Right, and as you say, it can present itself at any age, any time. It's not necessarily something that you've already got cancer and it comes. It's just suddenly appears, or what?
Yes, it can present as a lump, and it can present mostly as a lump on the arms or the legs or the trunk. But it can be a lump inside the body, deep within the body, which you may not be aware of until you actually start to have pain. Or you're having an operation for something and they find it. For instance, it can appear in the womb, and some women may go for a hysterectomy and the surgeon may think it's fibroids, but when they do the pathology, it's actually a sarcoma. So it can present completely out of the blue. And the main thing is to raise awareness of it. So if people have got a lump, they do need to go and get it checked out, particularly if it's growing. That's a worry. The best thing is to have it diagnosed early, because that's much more of a chance of having a cure than if it's late, when it's already spread in the body. It can spread in the bloodstream and goes principally to the lungs, but it can go to the brain and the liver.
Right. And that really is like a lot of cancers, aren't they? Because that's the whole thing. If you catch anything early, then your chances of sort of either, you know, being cured completely or certainly living a much longer life are much more enhanced, aren't they?
Oh, you're absolutely right. It's the crucial factor. And there's a big push by the government to raise awareness of cancer, all types of cancer, to encourage people to go to the doctor, to have it checked out, rather than think, oh, this is just going to go away. Because the mind's very powerful. You can think of all sorts of excuses not to go to the doctor, and men are better at avoiding the doctor than women.
And you say it's a lump, so I think the point is that I'm obviously breast cancer, a lump in the breast, but that wouldn't be called a sarcoma.
No, it wouldn't, but sarcomas can appear in the breast. They're angiosarcomas, sarcomas of the blood vessels. So sometimes breast cancer, it's mostly breast cancer, it's cancer, but it can be sarcoma if it's an angiosarcoma.
And I suppose like some of the other cancers, you know, if you can feel... Like, we're told to feel the breast,
yes.
Men are told to feel the testicles, obviously.
Yeah.
And as you say, it could present anywhere in the body, a sarcoma. So if you had a lump, that's the time to go. But I suppose if it's within the body, it's a bit like ovarian cancer, isn't it?
Yes.
Or liver cancer, or one of those things that you can't feel, can you?
No,
you can't feel inside your body, that's the trouble.
No, you can't. And you're absolutely right, and that's a problem. There's a type of cancer called sarcoma called retroperitoneal sarcoma, which appears behind the abdomen. And they can actually grow quite big before they're diagnosed, because the patient could be getting bigger and bigger in the abdomen and may think they're putting on weight or there's some other problem. And they may actually go to the doctor, and the GP may not actually twig it could be sarcoma because it's such a rare cancer. In fact, a GP may only see one cancer in their working life, one sarcoma in their working life. So the GP is not really looking out for sarcoma, because it probably isn't going to be. But unfortunately, for some people, it is. So again, if a lump's growing in the abdomen, obviously there are lots of organs there, so the bigger the lump is, the more extensive the surgery is. So again, it's much better, any symptoms, to go to the doctor quickly.
Yeah, but I think that's true for everything, isn't it, really? You know, yes. And it's one of those things, and I agree, it may be men, but I think everybody thinks, oh, you know, it's like a cold or something, you know, or meningitis in children. You think, oh, it's just a little chill or something like that. And it could be more serious. And it's trying to work it the right thing to do, isn't it? Because, you know, if we all present it all the time, it's like with melanomas and things on the, you know, with skin cancer, to know when to go is so important. And basically, if you have a lump that grows...
Yes, if you have a lump that grows, it's growing, go to the GP to have it checked out. The GP can examine you, but can also send you for ultrasound, send you for scans to look at the lump on imagery to start with, and then, if necessary, have a biopsy.
Right. Well, we'll hear about that in a few moments' time. Thank you, Tricia, very much. And I'm talking to Tricia Moat, and we're talking about sarcoma. Now, Tricia, we've talked about sort of how sarcoma presents itself and how you should be looking out for these things. But, of course, it's personal to you. Now, you were actually a nurse, weren't you?
Yes, I was a nurse, and it was the best job in the world, really. I loved being a nurse. I worked at Bournemouth Hospital as a specialist nurse. And I absolutely loved my job. It was a huge part of who I was. I did a lot of walking in my job, and I was actually quite fit. I played tennis, went swimming, did horse riding, never smoked, only drank socially, had a Dalmatian, so I did lots of walking. And then out of the blue, I was at work one day and had a pain in my leg. And by the end of the shift, my leg was really swollen. And I went to my GP, who thought I might have a deep vein thrombosis. So I then was sent to the hospital, to the deep vein thrombosis clinic, and they examined me. And I had no risk factors for DVT. I wasn't on the pill, wasn't overweight. But they did a blood test, and it showed that I had, it's called a D-dimer test, it showed that I had a clot thrombus somewhere in my body. So they started me on injections and warfarin, and I was to go back the next day for an ultrasound of my leg, which I did. And I had the ultrasound done, and the technician confirmed I did have clots in my calf and also a clot behind my knee. And I asked the doctor afterwards, well, why would I have deep vein thrombosis with no risk factors? And he said, oh, they can just happen. And I was actually... I somehow, deep down within me, I thought there's something wrong. My body was telling me. And what in fact happened was that there was a sarcoma wrapped around the blood vessels and nerve behind my knee, and that had caused constriction and given me the blood clots. So what had been read on the scan as a clot behind the knee was a tumour. So it remained hidden for another year. Meanwhile, I was off work with this DVT, and then I had a pulmonary embolism a few days later with a clot goes to your lung, and I went into hospital and had to be off sick for a while, a few weeks, and then I went back to work, but my leg was still swollen, and they said it was because I'd had the clot. I felt terribly tired, and I was losing weight, and then a few months later I started coughing up blood. And I was told, well, it's because you've been on warfarin, you're coughing up blood, because you've had a PE. And I kept going back to the doctor, and I went to see a different doctor at my practice, and she ordered a chest X-ray, and I saw a doctor at the hospital. And what happened was that they'd actually seen what looked like a cotton wool ball at the bottom of my lung, and it was actually turned out to be a tumour, and they sent me to Southampton Hospital, where I had a big lung operation to remove this. They didn't know what it was. I obviously thought it could be cancer, lung cancer. My father had died of lung cancer when I was 15. He'd been in the RAF, and in those days they used to give them cigarettes, and I was really anti-smoking. So I was always aware of cancer. But after the operation in Southampton, I was in intensive care unit, and the lung surgeon came to see me early the next morning with his entourage, and he stood at the end of the bed and he said to me, "I'm very sorry, it was malignant." And then he walked off, and I was absolutely shocked by this. Although I was half expecting it, just to be told, hear the words, it was very shocking. And I thought, well, someone's going to come and explain this to me. But they were all so busy, and it wasn't till later the next day he came back to explain. But actually, they'd sent the lump off to another laboratory because they thought it was melanoma. But in fact, the result came back from another hospital that it was actually sarcoma.
Right. And what about the one behind the knee? Was that then discovered after that?
Well, I had this major lung surgery, and they thought that it could be a metastasis. That's a secondary cancer that arrives in the lungs, spread from a primary cancer, from the first cancer. And they wanted to look around my body to see where it possibly come from. They found a benign tumour at the top of my arm, but the PET scan they sent me for actually only went down to mid-thigh. It didn't go down to my toes, so it missed the tumour behind my knee. So I was recovering from the lung surgery, which is pretty hardcore, and I was still losing weight, and again they thought it was because I'd had this sarcoma in the lung. But I kept going back to the GP, and she sent me back to the respiratory consultant at Poole Hospital, and he decided to do another ultrasound of the knee, because my leg was still very swollen. And the doctor did the scan this time, and he took ages doing it. Then he went out and brought back in another doctor, and I heard them talking, and I thought they found something. And one doctor said to the other, "You just have to write it up as you see it." And then they told me to get dressed and wait outside, and then the consultant came down to see me in the scanning suite, and that never happens. And he would call me in to see him, and I just, as soon as I saw him, I said, "You found the primary, haven't you?" And he said, "Well, we don't know, it could be another secondary." I said, "I think it's the primary." So I said to him, "I want to go to the Royal Marsden," because in my days of convalescing I'd looked up about sarcoma and realised there was a sarcoma unit at the Royal Marsden. So they sent me there, and I saw a surgeon there, a professor. He did a biopsy of this tumour behind my knee, and he said he was very sorry, but he was unresectable. He couldn't operate on it, he couldn't get it out. He said, "You're very unlucky because of where it is." And he wouldn't amputate the leg, because by now I had 8 more tumours in my lungs. So they don't amputate the leg if you've already got cancer spread in your body. But he decided that my best option would be to have radiotherapy for 6 weeks, 6.5 weeks, to the knee, to try and shrink it down. And that's what happened.
Right, so how long ago was this?
That was in 2004.
Right, so you said you had 8 more in the lung. So,
yes.
I mean, if I may say, you seem to be riddled with sarcomas.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes.
Considering it's very rare, it's a bit hard luck that you had so many altogether.
But
I suppose that's what happens.
That's the nature of the illness, yeah, unfortunately. Yeah. It sends seeds out around your body. And so after I had the radiotherapy, the professor, the surgeon, said my really best option would be to have surgery on both my lungs, and he wanted to send me to the Royal Brompton, the hospital next door to the Marsden in London, to have them surgically removed, 2 more thoracotomies. And I said, "Well, why will they do that if I've still got the primary?" He said, "I'll twist his arm." So I was sent to see another professor at the Brompton, who examined me, did the scans, and said, "No, I'm not doing this because you've still got the primary. You need chemotherapy." Sent me back to the Marsden. They said, "Chemotherapy isn't going to do anything for these lung tumours. You need to have these removed." So then, by then I was coughing up more blood, and the professor agreed to operate on one lung as a palliative reason to stop me coughing up blood, which I had done. And then 3 months later, the professor at the Brompton went on went on sabbatical, and they brought in a locum who did agree to operate on the other lung.
Right. So at the moment, what's the situation at the moment then?
Well,
if I may ask, dare I ask?
Well, after I had those lung operations, 6 months later, another tumour turned up in the lung, and the Brompton again refused to operate on me. But the Marsden, if you go to a specialised sarcoma unit, which you need to do if you have sarcoma, because the local hospital may only see a handful of patients a year, so the expert advice is go to a sarcoma unit where you're going to see a team of doctors. They're surgeons, radiologists, pathologists, clinical nurse specialists. They're working with sarcomas day in, day out. They've got the expertise and they know which are the best treatments, and they put you forward for new treatments. So I was sent to the Chelsea in Westminster for radiofrequency ablation of this new lung tumour, which microwaves it in essence, and that was fine. And then I was clear for 18 months. You go for scans every 3 months, everything was clear. And then 18 months later, I had a tumour turn up in my bowel, which was terrifically painful, and you were losing weight again. And they said it's very unusual for sarcoma to go to the bowel, but it did. It had gone to my small bowel, so I had part of that resected. Mm-hmm. And basically, it's just kept coming back. So 18 months was the longest I've been. It came back in the leg, and they wanted to amputate then because it had come back. But they sent me for something called CyberKnife radiotherapy, which is a very new type of radiotherapy. It's for inoperable tumours, so they use it on brain tumours, spinal tumours. And it delivers radiotherapy in pinpoint precision. So I had about 82 pinpoints of radiotherapy attacking this tumour, which is, as I say, wrapped around blood vessels and nerves, because they don't want to damage those vital vessels. And I had it on three consecutive days. You have it for about an hour, and so that's instead of 6.5 weeks. And again, it put that tumour to sleep. And then last year, I had a new sarcoma which had gone into my thigh, into my femur. And again, they didn't know what to do with me, but they sent me to Stanmore, which is the Royal National Orthopaedic Hospital that works with bone sarcomas. And I saw a professor there who is absolutely incredible. And he's removed the last part of the last third of my femur, gave me a titanium prosthesis and a new knee joint. So then I had to learn to walk again, which I've done. And I'm eternally grateful for him, because it meant I still had my leg. And then earlier this year, I had a new tumour at the top of my thigh, and I had that removed at Stanmore. And I just had 6.5 weeks of radiotherapy to that area, because there was only a 1 millimetre margin. So they want to try and mop up any spare cancer cells.
Right. I won't have counted all those. There's an awful lot of them, I must say. And it's obviously that once you have sarcoma, then it's quite likely to come back again, although not presumably always.
No,
I mean, that's the point, isn't it? It's a very rare sort of cancer, and I suppose some people have it and they get rid of whatever it is, and they don't present again, because as you said, it's 3 months to start with, and then it sort of gradually gets less. Is that right?
Yes,
as you go on.
Yes, for the first 2 years it's every 3 months, and then the next 2 years it's every 6 months, and then you go on to yearly scans. But with sarcoma, you could be followed up for 10 years. You could be followed up for a lifetime. It depends on the type of sarcoma. And also what grade of sarcoma it is. There's low grade, middle grade and high grade. So low grade is not very aggressive cancer. It's slow growing, so it's much less likely to spread. Whereas if you have a high grade sarcoma, which I had, it's very aggressive and it's likely to spread.
Right. And of course, you've seen a lot of the NHS. That's where you've been all round, not quite all round the country, but all round the south.
I've been, that's the sarcoma patient's journey. They have to go to get the proper treatment. But I've had NHS treatment and I've had private treatment. I've had a combination of both. But I'm eternally grateful to the NHS and to all the doctors. Because you really want somebody who's going to do their best for you. And the thing about going to places like Stanmore and the Marsden is that I appreciate their honesty. I don't want people to give me false hope, and I want people to tell me the truth. And they do that. They do that, and they talk with you in very explicit terms. But then that's okay. I'd rather people told me the truth.
Well, that might be because you've had that nursing background, and I think often nurses and doctors, well, they know part of it anyway, don't they?
Yeah,
so I suppose they want to know what the truth is.
Yes, you've got an advantage because you've got insider knowledge. You know what needs to be happening, and you know, like, one of the key people to contact is the medical secretary, because often you're told, well, we'll send you an appointment in the post. But having worked in the NHS for 25 years, I know that things can go missing, and so you've got to keep on top of your own case, really, to manage your own case.
Well, we'll come back to you in just a moment and perhaps find out what we should do if we find any of these lumps around. And you're listening to Community Matters on Hope FM 90.1 and, of course, online around the world. I'm Janet Latham, and at the moment we're talking about sarcoma with Tricia Moat. And sarcoma, as we said, Tricia, is something that's really quite rare. We're talking about nearly 4,000 cases, I suppose, a year. But having said that, if there's 4,000 cases a year, then there's many thousands then throughout the country who have it, because it's not that you're diagnosed and that's it. I mean, it's like so many cancers, isn't it? You know, where we used to think, cancer was it, and we mustn't talk about it and pretend it's not there. Nowadays, we do talk about it a lot, and a lot of people are still surviving with quite bad sorts of cancer, if I can say, and sarcoma is one of them.
Yeah, so it all goes back to the sooner you get diagnosed, the better. Because there are lots of sarcoma patients who have their sarcoma discovered. They have it imaged and biopsied and removed. That's the best treatment, to have surgery. And they may never get another sarcoma. Thank goodness. So, yes, lots of people have had sarcoma, and now that they're perfectly all right. They have to go for their checkups and scans and everything. But thankfully, they may not ever get another sarcoma.
Whereas others, as sadly you have, have had rather a lot of them.
Yes. But I'm very, very fortunate that I've been able to have all the treatments. And, the doctors have given me options, really. So I'm very, very thankful for that. But it certainly makes you appreciate everything. And being a nurse, I think, I'd gone into nursing because my father had died of cancer. And I'd always been very aware of how tenuous life is, and things can change just so quickly. So I was always trying to make the most of everything. And I worked with HIV and AIDS patients, and that was in the early days when there was no treatment. And you're so conscious of the value of every day and trying to keep everything in the day and not to project too far forward and try and do everything you can while you can.
Now, the trouble with yours was that it was in a place where it couldn't be got at, I suppose. That was the problem. And also the problem that nobody realised what it was.
Yes.
Perhaps, who knows if they discovered it earlier, but if it was wrapped around the blood, it must have, because they couldn't have operated whatever they did.
No.
And I suppose that's like a lot of these things. Some things are easy to find. Now, if you find a lump, wherever it is, you can probably go to the, I've got a lump.
Yes.
What are you going to do about it? But it's, you need to be persistent if you have that, if it doesn't go away. Is that right?
That's right. I mean, the majority of lumps aren't going to be sarcoma. That's the thing. So it's a very difficult dilemma. But if you have a lump and it's growing, and you've been to the GP and the GP just says it's a fatty lump, it may be a fatty lump, but they can always have it imaged, have an ultrasound done, they can always have it imaged to investigate further. And sometimes GPs, because they don't see it very often, they may be wrong. You can always have a second opinion. I mean, there's going to be lots of people out there who are what they call the worried well, who are always going to the doctor with lumps and bumps and things. But, they probably will never have sarcoma. You just don't know. But you do not want to... My husband used to say, trouble with you, Tricia, is that you'll probably die of politeness, that you'll accept what people say to you and not challenge it, even though I was a nurse. And that's a salutary lesson, really.
Right.
So you have to, if you have a lump and you do need to have it checked, make sure you do so. And if you're not happy with what you've been told, you can always ask for a second opinion.
And perhaps that's something that's true not just of sarcoma, but of lots of other things, you know, because some things are really benign and don't matter too much. And
yes.
Other things, as I say, like moles, you know, which
yes.
could turn out to be really
very
awful,
serious.
Very
yeah.
serious indeed. And it's just trying to make sure that you do the right thing, I suppose.
Yes, yes. Don't ignore it. Do go along and have it checked out properly.
Right, so that's really what you're going to say. And sarcoma, I think what we'll do is we'll have another break, and then perhaps if you can give some details of where we can find out
yes.
more about it, how we can get in touch, and perhaps, because obviously there may be people who are suffering from sarcoma who are listening as well
yes.
and may need some sort of helpline, but
yes,
we'll
okay.
come back to that after this.
Okay.
Across Bournemouth, Poole and Christchurch, this is 90.1 Hope FM.
And you're listening to Community Matters, and as I said, we're talking to Tricia about sarcoma. And Tricia, I suppose one of the things we just mentioned was that if people don't normally go to the doctor, if they do go, then perhaps there might be something seriously wrong, so it might be something to look at. Is that right?
Yes, that's... We meet with other sarcoma patients, and you often hear that they actually never went to the doctor. It was very unusual for them to go to the doctor. So, for instance, if a young man is going to the doctor and he never usually goes, but he's complaining about, you know, certain lump or certain symptoms, it could be a red flag to a GP that actually this person isn't somebody who's always here. So it could be absolutely genuine, not other things aren't, but it could be absolutely something that needs investigating. And because, as we said earlier, GPs don't see sarcoma patients very much, so they'll think of the most common condition first rather than the rarest.
Right. Now, if people are either suffering from sarcoma or perhaps think it might be something, you've set up a helpline, haven't you, or something to help people. And also there's a letter they can get, isn't there? There's a magazine, I think.
Yes. When I was diagnosed, it was 3 years before I met another sarcoma patient, and you do feel quite isolated because it's really comforting to talk to other people with the condition. And so we met up with some people in Bournemouth who have sarcoma, and we started a sarcoma support group, which actually we started the first meetings in Southampton, because there were so few of us, but we knew there were some patients in Southampton and Portsmouth. So we started meeting in Southampton, and Macmillan gave us some funding to set up the group and do our leaflets. And now we've got a group in Southampton and Bournemouth, and we meet on the second Wednesday of every month. Not every month, every other month. But I'll give you the Sarcoma UK website, which is a national organisation. We're under the umbrella of Sarcoma UK. This was set up by a patient with sarcoma, and it's a registered charity, and they give out so much information support. They raise awareness and educate health professionals and patients, and also they also have a funding stream to support research. So if I read it out, it's sarcoma.org.uk. If you go to their website, and you can click on all the different support groups around the country, and our group's on their website. And in Bournemouth, we meet at the Grove Hotel, which is a fantastic hotel in Bournemouth, which is a Macmillan in the Community hotel. And they're just so kind to us there. We have a really lovely room and tea and everything, and we get together and we meet other patients and other carers as well, because sometimes I think it's actually harder for the carers. I certainly felt it's been much harder for my husband than it's been for me.
Well, I'm not sure about that at all, and I'm sure he wouldn't agree with that, but I know what you mean, because sometimes caring is a task that people don't realise is quite tricky sometimes, and And I think it's helpful too to know that other people are going through the same thing from a caring point of view, as well as the person who's actually suffering from it.
Yes, absolutely. It's the carers are an enormously important part, and they can meet other carers, and it's absolutely vital. It's been a lifesaver for lots of us, and I've made some absolutely fantastic friends through this.
Right. So find out Sarcoma UK. I think if you just Google that, you probably, not sure if I should use that. I should use the word search engine. I think that's what I'm supposed to use. Then you can find out all about it. But thank you so much, Tricia, for talking to us about it. And it certainly raised awareness. And as I say, there is a newsletter. Is it newsletter?
Yes. Well, yes, there's a very good newsletter they give out. And they've also done a whole series of booklets, because when I was diagnosed, I wasn't given any information at all, because there wasn't any. So Sarcoma UK have worked very hard to produce lots of education materials. So if you go on their website, you can order the booklets or look at them online. And they do have a phone number if you're not on the web. It's 020 7250 8271. They've got an office in London, and they're very helpful.
Right, and we'll give that out again. Okay, thank you so much for talking to us. And, well, as I say, we'll raise awareness, and perhaps those booklets, GPs who don't much know about sarcoma can find out as well. Thank you very much.
Fraser